Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. Bob, it is episode 250 for people who like, you know, round numbers like that.
I like round numbers. I'm proud of us, Matt.
Yeah.
Everybody knows we should have stopped at least 100 ago, but we forged on.
That's right. We've been dragging the same formula for, you know, triple digit, too many episodes. And here we are.
Well, you know, as they say, if it's broke, don't fix it.
And if it never was, I'm not even going to try to out cliche you. Bob, there's so much to get into, including I was at not one, but two wine events yesterday. The wine events, the media wine events are back, Bob. Ah, we're returning to normal. Thank you, Elon Musk.
That was your takeaway from last night, was thank goodness wine events are back?
Well, Bob, how am I supposed to spread the good word of what Portuguese wines can do beyond port if I don't go to these Wines of Portugal events?
So do you get drunk at these things?
No, absolutely not, because you know, then there's going to be like a scarlet letter on you if you're the person out there that's getting drunk. You are spitting. There are spittoons everywhere.
So when you go to the press box, you're not allowed to cheer for the team, even if you're a fan of that team. Everybody knows that's press box etiquette. Is this like wine etiquette where if you're going to a tasting, if you're drunk, it's like cheering for the Leafs in the press box?
That's perfect. Yes. I love that analogy. That is exact same. And you can always tell the people, usually too much cologne or perfume, and they're dressed like afterwards they're about to go on a night on the town, and you can see them slurring and they're not spitting, and you look down on them.
Well, it's good to know the world isn't a snobby world.
Yeah. Well, it's a little professionalism. It's why you're not there to get drunk. You're there to learn, take notes, give out information.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds great.
I got all my douchebaggeriness to the side. What was nice was this was a slice of normal. And everyone was so excited just to see colleagues again in person and be around and get to talk to people and just you know, human interaction. It was, you know, beyond yes, hey, look at me drinking wine on a weekday at 11 in the morning. But there was just something really nice about being around everyone.
Wait a minute. It was 11 in the morning?
There was two. There was one at 11 in the morning. That was the Wines of Ontario. And then the Wines of Portugal, I got there around 4:45 after my show.
Well, that would be the time zone.
Yeah.
That would be you're 5 hours ahead in Portugal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Portugal one was going from 2 to 6 p.m. The Ontario one was 11 to 1. So I a lot of Uber yesterday for me.
So is 11 a.m. a little early for a wine tasting?
No. Absolutely not. Your senses are better earlier in the day. When I used to work for a consignment company, we would start tasting and we would be going around to some of our producers, some as early as 9:30 a.m. But again, you spit, you drink water, you almost swallow or ingest none of it.
Has anyone ever marketed a breakfast wine?
No. But I always recommend either Moscato d'Asti, an Italian sparkler, or a German Riesling, low alcohol options. If you do have to drink wine in the morning for breakfast, I do not recommend it. It feels like you're going to go down a bad path, but at least pick the ones that have low alcohol.
There's a certain joy about foods that taste better the next day. Mm-hmm. Pizza.
Yeah.
You know, what's another great next day is better food? Thai food can be better the next day, depending on what it is.
Thai food's a great one. Great one.
So I'm wondering whether there are some wines that just taste, I imagine like the sparkling wines, a bunch of them taste better in the morning than they would at say 10:30 at night.
Yes, absolutely. You want that freshness, that acidity, just to get your day going with vim and vigor.
With vim and vigor.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the rap said vim and vigor, Matt.
Let's go there.
Let's just park this right off the top. Even though they won yesterday, and it's 3-2, and they're coming back home. The idea that they would win 4 in a row against Philadelphia is still utterly and totally far-fetched. When Nick Nurse said, you know, plenty of teams have come back from 3-1, you know, he was playing a little bit of a philosophical trick there because they were, in fact, a 3-0 team. But here's my question to you. We were very down on them, as everyone was, after three straight losses.
Yes.
What has changed in how you will see this series, whether it goes six or seven? What has changed for you from where you were at two games ago?
There's a level of calm and confidence with the Raptors. Like last night in Philly, who was the team that looked nervous and uptight? The young Raptors or the more veteran Philadelphia 76ers? It was Philly. It's like, I don't want to go the cliche stuff here, but which is the team that has better leadership? You know, it's the Raptors. Which is the team that looks more calm, more mature? It's the Raptors.
So do you think that's more a function of Philly because of the Doc factor, the James Harden factor, the history of flaming out before it was their time? Do you think it's more like nervous Philly or composed Raptors?
I think it's composed Raptors. And even though Fred VanVleet doesn't play, he still has this, you know, gives this team this level of confidence. And you know, the guys like Siakam been there, done it. Guys like Nick Nurse been there, done it. So I just think that winning pedigree, and I think it starts in Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster, and it works its way down. This is a team that, you know, that isn't going to collapse.
All right, let's take this person by person.
Sure.
It was a terrific win. The outcome was never really in doubt. Past about halfway through the first quarter, it just felt like the Raps were going to win this game. Philly never really made a meaningful run. Anytime they looked like they were getting some life back in their game, Pascal stepped up big, Scottie stepped up big. They squelched anything before it happened. So Pascal had a damn good game, defensively, offensively. For all of the, he's not an alpha. Where are we at with that conversation now?
It's always going to be a continually evolving one, which is code for what? How the fuck do I know? But it's nice to say constantly evolving. What you loved about Siakam, obviously game four, the aggressiveness on Saturday. And then last night he's like, yep, I'll handle the playmaking. I've done this all year. And he gets seven assists. You know, we watched Kyrie Irving look horrible in games two, three, and four. We've seen plenty of stars look bad. I think it's a reminder, and it's a reminder to myself, and I'm sure I'll fail at this, that we just have to always look at Siakam a little bit more nuanced, as Josh Lewenberg has been saying, that this guy is a star. He's just not a top eight star, but there's really nothing wrong with it, and he needs to be commended.
So here's how I was thinking about this last night after the game. I was prepared at 3-0 to say that Pascal is the top of the middle.
Yep.
And now I'm prepared to say he's the bottom of the top, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, that puts him what? Like, there might be
20 better players.
Well, how's that? How many?
There might be 15 to 20 better players than him.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say like 12 to 16, but now we're quibbling. So, yes.
And previously I was about to say, of all the players you'd like to have, he's at the top of that list. And now I'm prepared to say, of those players you dream of having, he's at the bottom of that list.
Which is damn good.
Yeah. I think, you know, what's really interesting to me, Matt, is how we talked about this with hard work the other day, how everybody works hard. And so to be distinguished as a hard worker in the NBA, you have to be kind of obsessive. These guys are all aggressive. I mean, they couldn't be professional athletes unless they had that killer instinct. And what we've often wondered about with Pascal is he going to step up to the moment? Does he have the dagger in him? Kawhi had the dagger. Kyle obviously has it. We weren't sure if DeMar had it, and he developed it over time. And I think one of the reasons we've been down on Pascal was those first two games confirmed what we didn't like about him, which was when the going got tough, he didn't get going. Mm-hmm. And in the last couple of games he has, and I think even more than the physical skill set or performance, we're happy to see him try so hard.
And also, we now have seen it. And this is going to this is going to sound so obvious, but often in sports, we don't believe something until we see it. We don't believe the Raptors can come back, and rightfully so, because it's never happened. Until it happens, then we're always going to have one mindset about it. But now with Siakam, with that game four and that game five, whenever we're having the debate, and let's face it, we're going to have it and we're going to be wrong about Siakam and we're going to be right. But no matter what, you can look back and go, okay, nope, we saw him do it at an incredibly high level when the stakes were really high, you know, and that's the great thing about these last two games is at least, and also for his confidence, he knows, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I can do this.
We're probably not making enough out of Pascal's best two games came at the same time that Joel Embiid's been hurt.
Yep.
And that's fair because Embiid at his best is a generational player who's one of the two or three best players in the whole league. So it's reasonable to say, you know, even if you're damn good, a guy like that could give you a hell of a time. But I'm glad he's being opportunistic because what drove us nuts about those first three games is he would have Danny Green on him and pass the ball. You know, basketball is cruel and merciless, like most sports, like most of life. If you have an advantage, you have to exploit it. They don't come around very often. You have to make the most of it. He wasn't making the most of his advantages before. Now he is. And that's what an alpha does. You see a weakness, you expose it mercilessly until either the game is won or they fix the weakness.
By the way, sticking with that theme, the third quarter, and you can see all these videos on Twitter, the third quarter when Achiuwa, Anunoby, Achiuwa, Siakam, all of them are attacking Embiid and getting dunks and layups. It was like, I was just sitting there watching it going, what am I seeing?
You know what it was like? And this is so perfect. It was Jurassic Park when the Raptors attacked the T-Rex.
Yes. Love it.
We were a school of piranha on Joel Embiid. And watching Precious Achiuwa look to take him one-on-one, oh, God, that was fun to watch.
Off topic for 8 seconds, and you're right.
Yeah, right. Okay, sure.
What is scarier? There's a lot of piranhas with an S or piranhae. What is scarier if you hear that statement when you're on a rickety raft in the Amazon?
I think one of the things about movies is they taught us never to dangle our foot over the raft in the Amazon.
That is true. It'll murder you every time.
I'm okay with piranha because piranha don't feel like they could capsize the boat. Mm-hmm. Whereas crocs and sharks and anacondas, they could capsize the boat. Yep. I'm okay with piranha.
Not me. I hear the word piranha with that I at the end. That seems mysterious and it scares me. Anyway, sorry. We can get back to it.
But just before we go, though, One thing I like about them is you think, oh, it's just a little fishy. And then you get up close and their faces look built for business.
Yes. Yes. It's like Pike as well. There's something. We could go down a whole thing. Ooh, what's scarier when it's up close? A piranha or almost any bird?
I'm not really scared of any birds.
That's because they're small. Birds scare me.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm kind of scared of crows and ravens because usually like witches and demons follow.
And crows are the smartest animal, I think, on the planet. And that's not even me fucking around. It's true.
Yeah. One of the reasons they're so playful is because they're bored.
That scares me. I don't want an animal being bored so wants to play. Because when it's not bored, then every animal is either trying to fuck or feed.
It's true. The bored animal is looking at you thinking, could I eat that?
Yeah. Maybe I'll eat that later.
All right. Hey, I want to talk about Scotty in a second. But before we do, let's talk about Precious. 17-7 and so aggressive, looking for his shot. Precious has been the king of the no, yes shot from three.
Yeah.
God, you know, I watched him last night and I thought he's come so far in 1 year. Damn, the Raptors are good at player development.
They are. They are one of the best. And I wonder how many high draft picks who failed, how much better they would be if they were in the Toronto ecosystem. And those three-pointers, and he missed all four, those three-pointers were his dessert. And it's like, okay, Precious, if you're going to attack and you're going to get layups, and he was 7-for-7 from two, fine. That's you eating the vegetables. The three-pointers are your dessert. Go have your dessert.
Precious is strong, and he's not afraid of a challenge. And going one-on-one on Embiid was great. As much as I loved watching him, though, some of those Chris Boucher blocks on Harden, like, it just, there's so much take that to a good block.
Boucher is a professional tryhard. Like, every second is the ultimate of tryhard. The energy, it never dips.
Between Precious and Boucher and Gary Trent Jr., three guys who contributed a great deal to last night's game. And I thought about how in most of the other organizations, they would be also rans and castouts. But the Raptors find ways to coach guys up and make them contributors. It's a, you know, Nick Nurse, his staff, Bobby Webster, Ajiri. Again, last night to me felt like a win for Raptors culture. How they, one, didn't quit, as you pointed out, and two, their contributors contributed.
So that leads into sort of this big picture-y question I've got. Because last night, Bob, you're right. It was a win for Raptors culture and team building. Last night, with also the Brooklyn Nets getting swept, was a loss for the star system.
That's actually a pretty good big thought. Now, I don't know if I would say star system necessarily, because Jason Tatum was obviously really great.
But the star system based on, I'm going to move around whoever I see fit, and you, the organization, will acquiesce to my every need. And your Tatum, by the way, Tatum is a star. Tatum is the single biggest story in these NBA playoffs so far. It's Jason Tatum. But at least Tatum and Brown were drafted and developed there. So that's my one little difference, but I get what you're saying.
Okay, so how about this? Star system sounds sexier, but it's not exactly accurate. So how about this? It was player development versus player acquisition.
Or player development versus player empowerment.
Okay, that's now, okay. I feel like we've got a little of the sexiness.
Yeah.
And we've made it a little more accurate. Ooh, Matt, this is a good compromise. Player development over player empowerment. Yes, yeah. Great opening thought.
It's almost like I hadn't written all of that an hour ago. Except for that last line.
They're like, well, okay, you know what? This is a great riff. I love this. Go off on it for a bit, and then I'll grade it.
Well, and by the way, the player empowerment thing, I came up with that here, but my opening thought is kind of about the, you know, that at least for one night, the star system got hit. But you look around, like, I look at Kevin Durant, and he's got to be wondering, what did I birth? You know, he goes to a team where, you know, Kyrie said it's not going to be about me, and then it was. And James Harden, we want this guy. Oh, wait a minute, he's not in shape. Now we've got to trade him. And okay, now we've got Ben Simmons. And does anyone have any idea what Ben Simmons is going to play? We know he likes to wear just very, you know, loud clothing, and he often looks awesome. But it's just for one night, it seemed that the catering to the stars, it didn't work. Harden, yet to be a difference maker. Embiid, great first half, not great in the second. Durant and Kyrie, lousy. It was a stunning night of basketball.
Okay, so I want to push back a little bit with Philly because Joel Embiid's hurt and Harden's banged up.
Is he?
Yeah, he's got bad hamstrings.
You know what I wonder about, Bob? Does Joel Embiid look at James Harden, and does he see Ben Simmons? After the game, Embiid said about Harden only taking 11 shots. I've been saying all season, I've been saying this since he got here. He needs to be aggressive. He needs to be himself. That's not really my job. That's probably on the coach to talk to him and tell him to take more shots. Is Joel Embiid looking at Harden and seeing, is that a pudgier Ben Simmons on my team?
You know, we all love Tyrese Maxey, but in the end, everybody who didn't trade for Kyle Lowry, who now is underperforming, shame on you. Mm-hmm. The Ben Simmons thing is interesting. I don't think he sees him that way because he probably hated Ben Simmons so much. However frustrated he may be with James Harden, it will never approach that. But the whole taking shots thing is interesting. I'll tell you, in those first two games, Harden destroyed us as a playmaker.
He did.
And, you know, Bill Simmons made an interesting point the other day about LeBron and how maybe this is true of Tom Brady too, but there's more stars who are excelling later in their careers, which is almost making us forget you know, these guys eventually do drop off.
Yes. It was
there's
a great point.
Idea that Harden, you know, there's an old rule in business that we tend to think of ourselves as being worth as much as we made in our best paid year. Whatever that was, is what you think generally is what you should be making. And I think it's that way sometimes with athletes too. It takes us a long time to forget they're not that player anymore. They're still good, but they're not that player. John Tavares has almost done 1,000 games. He's not going to be as good as he was 6 years ago. But it's hard to let that go because that's how we think of them. That's how we remember them. So what I think Nick Nurse adjusted to was that Harden is good, but not great anymore. I think what Daryl Morey wanted to be true isn't true. I expect they're going to beat the Raptors, and I think they're going to lose to whoever they play next because Harden's just not that good anymore. He's not bad. He's a good player, but he's not a great player.
But not what they need him to be. The construct of this team was he needed to be great, and he hasn't been. And a lot of that, though, is the Raptors' defense, where they did a really good job. Every time Embiid gets the ball, you double him right away. Get him to pass, make him uncomfortable. And then you don't overcommit to Harden. You defend him, and you put a damn good defender on him, but you don't immediately double Harden. You immediately double Embiid. You wait and see what you do with Harden.
So last night there was a play where Embiid gets it in the low post. There were three Raptors around him and he spun and laid it in. And that was just, there's nothing you could do about it. It was an exceptional talent doing exceptional things.
Yeah.
There was a time when Harden off the bounce could get to the basket or just twist you up in a way that was truly exceptional to the equivalent of what Embiid did. And he can't do that anymore. He's still really good, but he can't do that anymore.
And that little, the thing about Harden, he can't beat you. Like, he needs to have that. Once he loses that, it diminishes him so much as a player.
You know, he's still great at drawing fouls. He's very smart. He's strong. I think they're obviously a better team with him than Ben Simmons.
Yes.
But... yeah, I think one of the adjustments, again, that Nick Nurse made was not fearing James Harden quite as much with his defensive game plan.
Correct.
And forcing him to take that extra. Like you saw last night, who was on him? I think it was even Gary Trent Jr. But just kind of played him straight up, didn't foul, forced him to take that three at the end of the clock. It was in the second half. I can't remember exactly when. But I remember when I watched it, I thought that was a perfect defensive performance. Didn't foul. Kept him from getting that entry pass in there, made him take the three, and he missed.
Can I throw out a hot take at you, Bob?
I'd love a good hot take.
Raptors are better without Fred VanVleet in the lineup.
Is hot a new way to say dumb?
What's that?
Is hot a new way to say dumb? Like, is this something that the kids are doing? I don't know about it.
You haven't seen it on TikTok, Bob? We're like, time for some hot takes. I'm like, yo, youth. That's dumb. And they're like, fly, or whatever it is the kids say.
You know me, I love the dumb ladies.
Okay. Let me make it from a hot take to a warm take. The Raptors are better off than with having injured Fred VanVleet. When he's not hitting his threes, he's not really doing much for them. And with him being out, it means that Nurse has had to go bigger more often. And this whole season, what have they been doing? They've been giving Barnes and Siakam more of a chance to run the team. If this was almost any other team, losing your star point guard would be horrible. But the Raptors have enough players who can handle the ball. And with Fred VanVleet not hitting his shots, he was a liability out there. So that's my semi hot take.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there in the sense that, and we've talked a lot about this, you know that I think Fred, as much as I love him, and I think he's going to continue to play all-star level or near that for another few years, but I think he should be your two guard because I just don't love how he runs the offense. And he's better off ball. He's better at catch and shoot. He's lethal from three, but injured Fred jacking up shots wasn't doing anybody any good. there was a moment last night where Pascal was bringing the ball up, and I just thought, this is the future. You know, this kind of like combination of Pascal and Scotty running the flow of the game from the point forward position. And the sooner we get there, the better it'll be.
Yeah. And let me say, I think Van Vliet is the number, if we ranked who are the best leaders on Toronto-based sports teams, Van Vliet's number one. And I'm not even, like, that takes me a half a second to come up with. I think part of it's just he's not been 100% healthy. So, like, the Raptors, go back to that Saturday game. Their offense didn't suddenly drop off when Van Vliet got hurt. The offense didn't suddenly drop off last night without him in there. Like, they didn't start committing tons and tons of turnovers.
One thing that happened was Precious was really good and helped to absorb some of the points you lose by having Van Vliet in the lineup.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can always count on that.
Sure.
Gary Trent Jr. had a good game. You can't always count on that. The other guys stepped up, and so it might be an artificial bubble. But you're, I think, 100% right, which was the Fred we were getting, like, they did the smart thing by sitting him. And I believe he said before the game, his body just eventually gave out. And why wouldn't it? He played an incredible number of minutes this year, hard minutes too. But yeah, I stand by it. Maybe this is my dumb take. Wink, wink, hot take. They'd be better off with a different guy at the point. Move him over. And between the three of these characters, with Gary Trent Jr. mixed in there, because Malachi Flynn doesn't really count, you've got a three-headed monster. And that would be a great backcourt.
If you did that, you're going to need a bigger point guard. You can't have two small guards.
Yes, I agree. You know who I was thinking we missed? I was thinking we missed DeLon Wright.
Ah, DeLon. I hadn't thought about him in a while.
You know, good backup point guard.
Yeah.
I think he's 6'4". He plays reasonable defense. He's not going to cost you a fortune. If you could shuttle him between point and two guard throughout the course of a game, that wouldn't be so bad, would it?
No, not at all.
Let's talk Scotty.
12 points, 5 of 7 shooting in the first half. You talked about how you need someone else to step up with no Van Vliet. Scotty gave that to you in the first half. Didn't do as much in the second half. But it's another full game for Scotty in the playoffs. And now he gets an extra day of rest.
You know, he rolled his ankle. And who knew what was coming back? I wasn't even sure they should play him, although... You know, I don't have the medical chart, so I don't know, but just afraid that he would actually really damage his ankle as opposed to just hurt it. He's looked really good.
Yeah.
He's incredibly calm. And of all the things that are exciting about the Raptors that we've learned in the last two games, the most exciting is that Scotty Barnes is going to be a motherfucker one day.
Yes. There's no other way of putting it, Bob. Bob, you nailed it last time where, you know, do we need to eventually see that smile go away? And it's so sad about the NBA that for us, for you to truly be an MFer out there, you can't look that happy and wonderful. Like, it's in some ways I feel so bad, but how can you, again, not be excited for the third time in a row now when Scotty Barnes plays, he looks confident and calm as a rookie on the road in an elimination game. It's truly remarkable to watch.
Okay. Who is the best adjusted alpha winner in the NBA in history?
Oh my God. No one?
I've got one.
Oh, okay. Okay. Who's yours?
Magic Johnson.
Yeah, except for Magic keeps trying to come back and then quits. But, you know, that's because he's like, yeah, I don't enjoy this anymore. Okay, Magic is a good one. Yes, Magic's a good one. I was going to go with Dirk Nowitzki. I've heard him in interviews. He just has such a delight and seems really at peace.
Tim Duncan?
Tim Duncan, 100%. Hakeem Olajuwon.
Actually, that's a pretty good list.
Not Jordan.
Nope. No. Not LeBron, not Kobe.
Not Durant. Not Durant. Nope.
Steph Curry seems pretty happy.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Steph does. Yeah. But it's funny.
Maybe he doesn't have to lose the smile.
You're right. Steph still has the smile. Magic never lost the smile. You know what, Bob? Let it be said. Scotty Barnes, continue to smile.
You know what I always am amazed by when I watch Scotty? I always feel like I'm expecting him to be bad, but then everything works.
It's because he doesn't have the face of a killer.
I don't know what it is, but I'm always thinking that shot's not going to go in. Oh, it went in. Or, oh, that drive, that's, he's not going to get, oh, no, he did. Like, it just seems like, I don't know what it is about that guy, but whatever he works at, works.
It does. And God, it's this. Here's the great thing, Bob. If the Raptors lose at home on Thursday, that's going to stink. But your optimism for next year has gone up based on two wins.
Yeah. In the same way, you know, I always maintain this. It's not whether you win or lose that causes real angst. It's how you do it.
Correct.
And if it confirms the narrative that you had, it's so much more painful than just losing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we used to feel this with the Leafs at the beginning of the year. We really piled on, but that's because it looked like they were continuing the same BS that we'd seen time after time. Mitch Marner's not happy, yada, yada. And you think, oh, this team's learned nothing. But then, you know, they turn it around. You go, okay, the things that I needed to see addressed have been addressed. So all those worries that we had about the Raptors, Pascal's not an alpha. They don't have enough talent. The way that they play can't work in the playoffs. No, they kind of addressed it.
It's, yeah, yeah. I'm just happy. Like, I'm a little loss of words because I'm happy. Just everything that you wanted to see, you've seen. And I think also why we're happy is because we were so down after game three and we were ready to go to all those dark places. Just go back and listen to the last podcast with us. And now we're in a different mindset. God, sports is fun.
Playoffs, eh? I've mentioned this before, this playoff series, but it reminds me of when we played Milwaukee in the championship year. How after two games, it was like, that was a fun run, but I guess we're done now. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of games in and you're like, I don't care if we win or lose. We've proved we belong.
Sports is cruel.
Yeah. Okay. Hey. So I'm going to ask you for some wine pairings here. Okay. Precious Achiuwa. Big, bold, strong, maybe even a little clumsy, but in the end gets it done.
In honor of the event I was at yesterday, everyone out there, and you can get these wines certainly cheaper, go to your Portuguese red wine section, and the grape, the main grape is called Torriga Nacional. Go find a wine like that. That's Precious Achiuwa.
All right. Nick Nurse, complex. You're not sure if you like it at first, but the further you go along, you go, not only is it good, it's expanding my mind.
That's easy. But I'm going to do something different. I was immediately just going to go to German Riesling. I'm going to go to Clare Valley in Australia. They're Rieslings. They could be stinky and they smell of petrol. But once you have a couple sips, there's 17 different flavors going on. And you're going to be thinking, what the hell is going on? And you're not going to know, but you're going to be laughing because it's so good.
James Harden. And this is a hair of the dog thing in honor of the beard. Worst headache next day wine.
Let's go with a Meiomi Pinot Noir. There's like 16, 17 grams of sugar per liter. It seems like a good idea. It's a big it's a big red, but it usually lets you down.
Ben Simmons, a wine you drink, and when you're done, you think to yourself, did I even have anything?
Pinot Grigio. Just a mass-produced Italian Pinot Grigio. It's basically an alcohol delivery system with a little lemon lime, but not much else going on.
All right. That was good. Okay, so before we move on to some other things, anything from the first week and a half of the NBA playoffs that has reset what you thought was going to happen before they started?
The Boston sweeping the Nets. I thought, like everyone else, because I'm a dummy, I thought the Nets could be a scary team. They weren't. They're not a team. On the other end, all the wonderful metrics with the Celtics in the second half of the year, we saw it on display. Kevin Durant shot 39%. Kyrie was lousy after game one. That, to me, is the big thing.
Yeah. the Boston looks scary. Are they your new favorites to get out of the East, especially with Kyle banged up?
Lowry banged up. Chris Middleton out. I think you kind of have to go the Boston Celtics.
I think you do too. And of all the teams, they're the ones I want to see make it the least. I can accept Milwaukee because of Giannis, and everybody loves Giannis. I could kind of accept Philly only because I think it would just make the nerds so happy that the process finally worked. And Miami, of course, for Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Boston, I hope when I see Boston sweep Phoenix, when I see Boston sweep Brooklyn, what I hope is that Phoenix gets better.
Yeah.
That was my first thought was, oh, we need Devin Booker back because someone's going to have to beat these bastards.
That or Golden State's got to continue doing what they're doing.
Is Denver becoming a blow-up team?
No, because the Murray and the Porter injury. To me, my biggest issue with Denver, why did you give Michael Porter Jr. all that money for a guy who's never been able to be healthy? I mean, that contract, maybe it was simply a case of, okay, if we don't give it to him now, he's going to leave in a year and a half or he's going to bitch his way out. But that contract just always confuses me.
You know, I love fallout from the playoffs and, you know, the fallout from the New Jersey, from the Brooklyn situation is probably Steve Nash and not the roster, if I have to guess.
Yeah.
I'm keeping a close eye on Denver and I'm keeping a close eye on Utah.
Utah feels like it's done. And that's just me parroting everyone else in the media. But I haven't heard too many, you know, other sides, too many people zagging. No, this Utah thing's going to work. That just feels doomed, dead on arrival.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, and it's terrible, but I just like a shark. Like a piranha. I'm constantly scouring other teams for who can we pluck off and save.
Yeah, I know. And if you're other stars, don't you look at what's going on in Toronto and going, why would I not want to be a part of that?
You know who I want.
Who?
You know.
Oh, Karl Anthony Towns.
You know it. We were texting each other the other night. To me, he is the great untapped resource of the NBA right now. And he's never had a good coach. It feels like the team's already starting to swing over towards Anthony Edwards. It just feels like if he was a Raptor and they taught him how to play the Raptor way, he's an all NBA player for the next 5 years.
You know what my problem with him is, Bob?
Hmm.
And maybe coaching can do this. He just seems so immature. Like, and his voice changes when he's being mic'd up and the team's winning. It's a little bit more of a Southern drawl. And then during press conferences, I forget who brought this up. Then his voice gets is a couple octaves lower. I'm like, oh my God, you're right.
The perfect Raptor is unconventionally gifted and overlooked.
I don't think he's overlooked. I think the NBA, everyone's having a good look at Cat right now.
Fair enough. But whether it's Pascal or Kyle or Scottie Barnes, it just seems like this administration loves to see someone like they love their diamonds in the rough.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like you make a good case. There's a lot there.
I don't know that we've seen the best of them. And you made a really good point earlier. It's a cruel thing because the window of an athlete's career is so short. It's not like you're a writer and you've got 40 years to try to write your great book. You know, you've got 8 to 12 years, if you're lucky, to make your name. And if you don't land in a good situation, you could lose half those years. You could lose your best years. And I'm with you. Like, how do people not look at Toronto's system and think, you know, like a Gary Trent Jr. situation? I could go there and do great. Like, why is it not a hot destination? Because you could save your career there.
Yeah. Fred VanVleet, undrafted. Precious Achiuwa, seeing the growth there. Siakam taken so low. OG Anunoby, like on and on
Chris
and on.
Boucher.
And on. Yeah, Boucher. And if you're a scorer, why wouldn't you want to go to Toronto where you're going to be surrounded by young athletic defenders who don't care about getting 20 shots?
Yeah, that's a great point. So maybe that, as we just sort of wrap up, what did we learn about the Raptors, is we learned that it's a win for the organization, what they did over the last two games, and that the rest of the NBA is stupid. Because, and I don't mean dumb like hot. I mean stupid like stupid.
Yeah.
That they don't see that your situation determines your success.
That was fat.
Word.
By the way, one last thing. Not really about basketball.
Yeah.
How self-entitled do you have to be to boo your team in the second quarter when you're down by six? What were the 76er fans doing?
One of my great joys is listening to Alvin Williams rip on Philadelphia, and he just kind of opened the kimono. It's just like, yeah, I don't consider myself Philly. I consider myself Toronto. I hate Philly. And Matt Devlin's like trying to soften him. He's like,
yeah, that's right.
Nope, don't hold me back, Matt. I hate Philly.
You're right. Alvin, that was, I think that's Alvin's best moment as a broadcaster was that. That was great.
I loved it. It was, he just kept going on it and going on it. They're going to boo. They're going to boo. And when they started, it was like, you see, that's why I hate them.
And yet, stars might choose Philly over Toronto.
Yeah. You know, we here in Toronto can't imagine why anyone wouldn't want to be a Maple Leaf. And even all those years when they were terrible, you know, Jerome McGinley is a free agent. Well, how could he not want to be a Leaf? Like, there is a kind of a entitlement that comes with being a legacy franchise. It's hard to imagine that a Jerome McGinley would want to go to Colorado because they have a great organization. You know, we have that a little bit here in hockey, and we don't have that here in basketball. We're the good organization no one pays attention to in basketball.
Yeah, that's true.
So you know how it is. We're just as arrogant as everybody else. We could just as easily say hockey people are stupid.
No, you're right. I would say we're just as much of an asshole as anyone else, but Philly's like, hold my beer. No, you're not.
This is actually a good sidebar here. Worst fans in the world of any team?
Laker fans.
Why?
Wildly delusional.
Mm-hmm.
They bet up the Lakers to win the championship. They go nuts if anyone says anything negative about Kobe, and this was before his tragic passing. They were so insecure that when LeBron came here, there was like a huge hive of Laker fans that were already yelling and screaming, he's not as good as Kobe. He's not as good as Kobe. It's like, just calm down. So I put Philly fans, or excuse me, Laker fans pretty high up.
Habs fans are kind of irrational. Canucks fans are kind of passive aggressive.
Edmonton fans irrational. Are aggressive, aggressive.
Aggressive, aggressive. Are there any bad baseball fans?
Well, let's see. All the Yankee fans throwing garbage on Baltimore Orioles players. How about just go there?
I think that counts. When I was looking at that story, I was thinking one of the problems that we have with fandom is fandom has become just another aspect of consumer culture, and everything in our culture is built around the consumer experience. The worst thing you can do in North America is give someone your money and feel like you didn't get every nickel's worth. You know what I mean? To the point where, like, we'll hand over our individual rights as long as it means that we have a good consumer experience.
Yeah.
And I just feel like the level of entitlement, like, no wonder so many people don't want to work in the service industry. It's because people are insane what they'll complain about. I don't think it's as bad in Canada as it is in the States, but it's bad here too. Like, this idea that I ordered my food, it should be in front of me, piping hot and delicious within 45 seconds.
Well, the reason for that is, Bob, two insidious words when they're put next to each other.
What's that?
On demand.
Yeah.
You're going to get this movie on demand, your favorite show on demand, order from your favorite restaurant on demand. And for over 2 years, I've been sitting at home getting things on demand. Then they got to go out into the real world where that doesn't exist.
You and I have talked about this a lot. And the one thing the generation will never understand is waiting in line to see something and how that can actually improve the experience.
Correct.
Whether it was the Star Wars movies or going to see the Stones, it becomes an experience and the anticipation mounts. I remember standing in line for Return of the Jedi, and it was around the block, you know, like literally around the block. And you went and you knew you weren't actually going to get to see the next screening. You were in line for the next screening because there were too many people there.
Yeah.
You know, people would be subbing out and bringing everyone pizza. from the pizza just up the street. But in the end, it became an event and not just another piece of content for my day.
Bob, I've heard of this thing called foreplay. I don't know if it exists, but apparently it may. I'm going to Google it later.
Well, I think you're down to threeplay now, Matt.
Even that seems arduous. But the foreplay for the event is the thing that is going away. And to your point, I remember opening night of Batman. When the lights went down, the crowd went nuts. When Jack's name appeared on the screen, the crowd went nuts. Why? Because we'd wasted the whole day waiting in line. And I get why younger generations like, well, that's a waste of time. I could do 1,700 other things. But that waiting in line was an experience that made it all that much better.
The last thing I remember being like that was Infinity War.
Yep.
Now, there were so many screens, there wasn't the same experience, but there was the gigantic anticipation that the culmination of this huge story was finally here. I'm pretty excited about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, but not the way I used to be.
No.
You know, No Way Home was awfully good. Mm-hmm. It really helped to reinstill faith in the Marvel universe generally.
Yeah.
I'm really hopeful Doctor Strange is excellent. If it's not, it's going to be so disappointing. If it is, it's going to just cast us on a new trajectory of this is great.
It has to be more than just the strength of Benedict Cumberbatch's sort of whimsy.
Do we buy his American accent?
I do when the movie starts. I never question it when the movie starts.
Is it good?
It's good enough.
Okay, good what's enough. Better? Have you watched Moon Knight at all?
Not yet, no.
Okay, so you don't know Oscar Isaac's accent yet?
No.
He's starting to get into all-time distracting accent territory.
Are we talking like Kevin Costner or Sean Connery and in Robin Hood sort of thing?
No. In fact, this is a good top five for us. Most distracting, not even necessarily the worst, most distracting accent in movie history.
I'm just going to say young Keanu without putting a movie there. I'm going to place that. Young
Keanu. I have to admit, the first place my mind went to was him as Jonathan Harker in Dracula.
Yes. He destroyed that movie.
You know, he wore his accent the way Janet Jackson wore clothes at the Super Bowl. It just seemed tear away.
Yeah.
He'd be halfway through a line and he would just go back to sounding like a surfer dude.
It is like, that's another list. Top five movies that were really good, but were ruined by one person. And in honor of Keanu.
Godfather 3, Sofia Coppola.
Yep.
Although I didn't think she was that bad.
I think you're saying that because you feel bad that she got piled on. If there was no media attention, you'd probably say it was her.
No, I honestly didn't think she was that bad. I actually thought Bridget Fonda was worse.
Oh, she was. She served no purpose. Just, it's like, hey, there's Bridget Fonda. And then like 20 minutes later, you didn't see her again.
Yeah, it was just not a good character.
No.
Movie ruined. You know, Scarlett Johansson in Jojo Rabbit didn't kind of ruin that movie for me.
I'm going to hold on a second, Bob. I got to take the streetcar to your house and drop kick you. She was awesome in that movie.
No. I don't know if she's ever been awesome in any movie after Ghost World. No, wait, of course, Lost in Translation.
And Match Point, the Woody Allen movie. She was awesome in that.
Actually, she was pretty good in that.
Yeah.
In fact, that's another good list, is actors who are amazing in one film and bad in everything else.
I have the number one, Bob. Are you ready?
I have the number one. You go.
Okay. Cameron Diaz in Something About Mary.
Oh, that is so good. That is an excellent, excellent, excellent one. I was going to say Lindsay Wagner in The Paper Chase.
Mm. Mine's a little bit more newer, but...
Yeah, there's no question. Mine is definitely for the film nerds. But she was the Bionic Woman.
Yeah.
But man, is she ever good in The Paper Chase.
Fell into my trap. I was waiting for the last 52 minutes for you to fall into that. Hey, by the way, real quick before we end, I got a lease question for you, but shout out to our sponsor, Jeff Pollock. If you need legal help, and by the way, his wife also is an accountant and helps with taxes. Too late for this year, but I bet a lot of you out there are thinking, oh, I could have got more of a return. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. JeffPollock.com, sponsor of the podcast. He's our lawyer. He should be your lawyer. Bob, you only get one of these two. Both could happen, but you only have one of these two. Are you ready?
Yes.
The Leafs get two wins to end the year, or Matthews gets two goals to end the year. Now,
oh, Matthews gets the goals unquestionably.
Okay. Yeah. I'm the same way.
Yeah, that magic number of 60 is special, and they're going to play Tampa Bay.
Yes.
Maybe this is a dumb take. I'm not as afraid of them as everybody else seems to be. I mean, they're obviously really good. It's not so much that they're not good that makes me say that. It's the Leafs look about as good as the Leafs can look right now.
That's what terrifies me, is that the Leafs look as good as they do. I'm sorry, Bob. I'm already pre-afraid of the Lightning. I'm terrified.
Yeah, eventually they're going to have to beat that team. And I don't know. There's just something about the way they're going in, and Matthews is playing, you know, great. Marner, like, those two guys are, you know, two of the five best players in the league right now. Mm-hmm. It's not just that Matthews is heart level, you know, quality since the new year flipped over, since the calendar flipped over. I think Marner might even have the most points in the NHL since 2022 started.
If not, he's close.
Yeah. The team has depth there. You know, if the goaltending is good, fingers crossed. I mean, again, it's just such a wild card. But yeah, the other day I decided to do this. You know how we'll go, ooh, Calgary looks good?
Yeah.
It's because we don't live with them and we don't see every shitty little thing about them day after day and complain about them. I'm sure there's lots of Calgary fans who have lots of complaints. So I'm trying to look at the Leafs as though I was another fan and think, would I want to play them? And no, I sure as hell wouldn't.
I think that's the most well-adjusted way to handle being a Leaf fan. Don't look at them through your own prism of torture. Look at them how another fan base would.
You know, people talk about Tampa Bay and go, oh, geez, I'd never want to play them. Yeah, but they didn't get as many points as the Leafs did. Like, at least on paper, the argument can be made. They didn't have as good a year. Calgary looks amazing. But are they? Daryl Sutter's going to win Coach of the Year. Probably. I don't know. But are we so convinced they're going to have a run? I don't know. It's being a fan just twists your mind.
It does. And when you say on paper, I was about to yell Montreal in the playoffs last year, but I'm not here for that. I like that mindset. I like that mindset. Go in and view the Leafs how other people, not Bruins fans, but anyone else.
It's what you got to try to do with your own kids. What was that about me? It's almost a Charlotte's home. She's got a cold. Nothing about you, honey. Just talking about how great you are. You know, everybody is convinced that their kid is going to be the next Leonardo da Vinci meets Clara Hughes. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I remember once on the air, this kind of shocked people, but I said, take your kid's class photo. There's 25, 30 kids. 70% of them, they're going nowhere.
Yeah.
Another 20% of them, you know, they're going to go somewhere, but they'll probably always be thwarted by life. They'll never really materialize the way they could have. Just, you know, bad luck. Then there's another 10%, you know, they're going to be good, but they're going to be disappointments as people, you know, they're going to be selfish. They're going to be part of the problem, you know. And then there's that one kid who really puts it all together. They're a great person. They're successful. And that is your kid.
And that is why Bob Mackowitz is not your school's guidance counselor. Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.